Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to open things up by giving you guys my dark horse pick for the AFC playoffs. I'm going to sneak in a little thought on the Le'Veon Bell situation in the middle of the show, but before that, we're going to get to the news with Jenny and Connor. And as always, we'll wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 10's in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And I'll be honest, I thought this week kind of sucked. We had a lot of games that weren't close, not a ton of storylines. You know, we'll get to the few that we do have out there. The Monday night matchup was terrible. I was excited about Thursday night football. That game wound up being a blowout. And so I want to sort of start here with a global thing. And we're getting close to Thanksgiving, so things have sort of started to crystallize. You're starting to get an idea of who the best teams in the AFC are, who the best teams in the NFC are, who's going to be playing into January. And feels like every year there's a team that right around this point turns a corner. And maybe we're not talking about them a lot mid-November, and then all of a sudden they find their way into the playoffs. So I want to open things up, and we're going to bring Jenny and Connor in here to tell me I'm wrong in a second. But I want to open up things by giving you the dark horse that I don't think very many people are talking about that I think has a very good chance to get into the playoffs. And that's the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the narrative out there over the last 2 months has been that Andrew Luck has had no help around him. We've heard about the offensive line problems, of course. And I think a lot of people are looking at the Colts as they were constituted over the last few years. And I think that franchise is very, very close to turning a corner. In fact, I think we may be seeing it happen right now. New general manager, now there for a year and a half, Chris Ballard. New coach, Frank Reich. We got Andrew Luck back in there. And I think there are two reasons why the Colts are a team to watch going forward into the back half of the 2018 season. Number one is Luck himself, who quietly has played really, really well the last 3 weeks. And if you were hoping that we would get back to seeing an Andrew Luck who's got potential to be a top five quarterback in the NFL, I think the last 3 weeks, there are a lot of good signs there, and not just in the numbers, and his numbers have been great. But the way he's being aggressive, getting the ball downfield, that's what they weren't seeing consistently early in the year, that he's willing to let it rip on a consistent basis. And so that's one piece of it, that I think the real Andrew Luck's coming back. And Andrew Luck has been, certainly since I started watching football, probably the best and surest thing of a quarterback prospect that we've seen come out of the college game. And number two, they've drafted really well. And this year's draft class in particular, the 2018 draft class, I think has a chance to change the franchise, has a chance to change everything there, has a chance to make the Colts a team that has been so reliant on Andrew Luck since he came into the league, transform them into a team that can win different ways, that doesn't need Andrew Luck to throw for 300 yards every week. And if you want to go down the list, the offensive line is now a strength. They have not allowed a sack since week four. They have not allowed a sack since the fourth week of the season. They've rushed for over 200 yards twice in that stretch, and they've now got they've got four top 40 picks in their offensive line, and two of them are rookies, Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith. They've also got potentially the defensive rookie of the year and Darius Leonard. Kamigo Touré, who they drafted out of Rutgers in the second round, has three sacks. They're getting Tyquan Lewis back off of IR. They love his potential, and they drafted a couple running backs who are playing a lot for them, Jordan Wilkins and Naheem Hines. And so I'm going to bring you guys in. I felt for a while that the Colts were going to be a force in 2019. And it's starting to feel like they're a little ahead of schedule. And I think there's a pretty decent chance. I think there's a pretty decent chance that when we get to January, they're still playing.
I wonder if Josh McDaniels, you know, looks at the way Andrew Luck is playing and has any regrets. You know, because obviously when he decided not to take that job, there was still uncertainty about his health. But now he, you know, it looks like you kind of were hoping to see him come through the other side. And that's what we're seeing now. Now, when you introduced this segment, you said dark horses defined as a team with a losing record who may still make the playoffs.
Yep.
So that would, under that category, the Eagles would fall into. The Packers are not quite losing, but they're 4-4-1, yep, which is pretty close. So I don't think those teams count as dark horses, but I mean, by the definition, I guess we could.
I mean, the Eagles, the Eagles are sort of in the same boat as the Colts too, in that no one's running away with their division.
Right, exactly.
And so there's still opportunity there. That sort of felt like, I don't know. Like, coming out of London, like, the Eagles played really well against the Jaguars in London, and it almost felt like that was like, okay, like, now they're starting to click and Carson's starting to play better, and like, you thought that was there for them. And that, when you're at that point of the season, like, and you lose the way they lost on Sunday, like, that feels like more than a one game setback. You know what I mean?
Like, a lot of injuries there, though, too, I think.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. There is. There's no question. Do you have a dark horse?
Yeah, I got a tasty one. Baltimore. Come on.
Baltimore.
Pivot to Lamar Jackson. Show people the thing, something they haven't seen yet this season.
So you think they're going to roll out like the option offense and all of a sudden take the NFL by storm?
Maybe not take the NFL by storm, but at least show them something that they haven't been showing on film for the last 10 years.
That's going to be interesting to watch over the next few days too, because
if that team can control the clock with that defense, you know, and they can, and they, you know, Lamar Jackson can play some sound football. I mean, I wrote this morning, why won't John Harbaugh try this? I mean, there's reports that, you know, maybe this is a mutual parting of ways at the end of the season. You know, his time there feels like it's coming to an end. Why would you go out not trying that? You know, his legacy in Baltimore is secure. Yeah. I don't think that he could do anything, you know, to destroy what he's built there.
I mean, he won a Super Bowl.
He won a Super Bowl. Yeah. He's been the consummate Baltimorean since he's been there. So why not give that a shot?
I mean, I guess you're sort of at, like, if you're Harbaugh, you're sort of like the nothing to lose point, right?
Yeah.
Like, if it doesn't work, I mean, if it didn't work, like, there wouldn't be teams lining up to hire him in January anyway.
I was gonna say,
there's going to be a job for him either way.
This wouldn't be hard to explain in an interview,
right?
A head coaching interview. I honestly think it would ignite the fan base a little bit. I mean, 10 years of Joe Flacco is a long time.
Yep.
You know, especially an injured Joe Flacco
without
a lot of wide receivers.
I'm all for it. I think it'd be exciting to see.
I mean, I think the Ravens are going to make the playoffs anyway. Like, I don't think they're that far out of it. Like, I'm kind of confused. Like, I mean, they're 4-5, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like they have a pretty good shot. I don't think they're a terrible team.
Well, that sixth spot in the AFC is wide open.
Yeah.
Like, it's because they... You figure the Chargers are probably going to be the first wild card if they don't win that division. And if they were to win that, if they were to win that division, then the Chiefs would be the wild card, right? Like, I think it's a fair bet that, like, there are going to be two AFC West teams in the playoffs, and then the sixth spot's wide open. Like, could it be one of the AFC South teams? Like, could it be Tennessee? Could it be, I mean, I don't think we think it's going to be Jacksonville anymore, but could it be Indianapolis? And then could it be Baltimore? Could it be Cincinnati? That's wide open. I mean, Miami, as shaky as they've looked, they're, like, still in it. Like, there's just that six spots wide open.
So I take that back. Not a tasty pick. I describe that as tasty.
No, but I think it's still tasty. I feel like, as you mentioned, Albert, that sixth spot in the AFC has, I think, for the past couple of years been a little...
Oh, it wasn't good last year.
A little shaky.
It wasn't good last year.
A little shaky.
Yeah, all right. So we'll jump right into the news now, and we're going to get to one of those teams right here that could be competing for that sixth spot in the AFC. News item number one for the week, the Patriots went into their bye on a down note, taking a 34-10 loss at Tennessee, in which the Titans outrushed New England 150-40 and never trailed. There's a great moment in this game. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Tom Brady finally catching the Philly special?
The response to it. The response to it, where Mike Vrabel came back and ran the same play and then said after the game. Like, and I think Vrabel is the only guy who could get away with this with Belichick, where not only does he do it, but he kind of shoves it in his face after. And he said, I wanted to see if we could make it look a little better than they did. So it's like just shoving Belichick's face in the dirt, shoving Brady's face in the dirt. I love that Vrabel's comfortable doing that. But I think there's a bigger question here, which is, all right, so now we got 10 games. The Patriots are going into their bye. Do you think they're in trouble?
No. I think this is
and
just...
By trouble, I mean, trouble is a relative term with them. Like, trouble is like, could that string of seven straight AFC title game appearances, could that get snapped?
Or could they, you know, not get a first-round bye, right?
Right, right. I mean, I think we all agree they're going to win the division, right? Like I don't think
I don't think the Bills are creeping up on anybody.
But they did just cut Nathan Peterman.
Sad day for Peterman.
I mean, 41 points, then Peterman's guy. It's unfortunate for you, I know. do you think they're in jeopardy of potentially being not at the level that they've been the last 7 years?
I think you started talking, Connor, and then I cut you off. So go ahead.
I think you know, I think at the end of every season, and at some point we're going to have to reevaluate the way that we think about this the older that Tom Brady gets. But, like, you know, at the end of every season, they're in the AFC title game. And, you know, these four or five losses that they have every year just seem to be sort of inconsequential,
right?
You know, and it's weird that I find it odd that Belichick is having a hard time essentially with just his former assistants and players this year. And I think that there is a way to beat the Patriots. Obviously, Patricia followed a similar formula earlier this year, and I think both teams had those very specific players that could make that game plan work. But a lot of other teams don't have that, and the Patriots are going to be able to carve a lot of people up just like they have in years past. So I think this is one of those things where we're just going to be shrugging our shoulders and say, okay, you know.
I think they're probably in the AFC Championship game again. I feel less strongly about them being in the Super Bowl than when I picked them to go there, and maybe it's a reaction to the Titan game. I don't know, but I feel like last week what it did for me is it put them on even footing with, okay, like the Chiefs, even though they don't have the experience, I think they probably have maybe an even shot. The Steelers, even though the Patriots have dominated them, like now, you know, maybe they've got an even shot with the Patriots. Like you know, again, we're talking about like what kind of champagne, you know, like with this argument. But I think that, like, you look at the Patriots, where they've been, and generally, I think when they've struggled over the last 18 years, and again, struggled relatively, it's when it all comes back to Brady and Belichick figuring it out, when it's just on them, you know, like when it's like, okay, like Brady's going to figure this out. And I look at a banged up Gronk. Is he going to be the same? Edelman's banged up. And I thought the offense was fixed, but now, you know, like, there's some questions about what they hang their hat on. They certainly didn't have something to go to on Sunday against the Titans without Gronk in there. And then defensively, you know, the secondary is pretty good, but the front seven's got issues, and it's sort of on Belichick to figure it out. And so I think that's sort of where the question is. It's like, is this one of those years where they're too reliant on the coach and the quarterback to figure it all out?
I think the last two times they went to the AFC Championship game and didn't go to the Super Bowl were – the games were away, right? They were in Denver, right? So I think that's where the determinant is, you know, what is their seeding? Are they the number one seed or not? Would they have the AFC Championship game in Foxborough or not? And I think that will determine if they go to the Super Bowl or not.
Being able to scramble the headsets at Foxborough for the opposing team and kind of affect their
wireless and stuff like that's a huge advantage.
You know, it's been a nice thing that they've been able to do and serve them warm Gatorade.
Maybe my favorite story that I heard, God, I don't even know if this was out there, but I know that when the Ravens were there in the divisional playoff in 2014, so the coach's booth, right? They, for some reason, it's the weirdest thing, had this issue where the window would fog up. And it was so bad that and, like, they look over in the booth next to them, there's no problem there. There's no problem. And it was so bad that they had to assign, like, one of their quality control coaches to, like, be up there, like, squeegeeing the window. So, like, constantly had to, like for one reason or another, and nobody could explain it, for one reason or another, the booth kept fogging up.
That's when you pull a Sean Payton with the fire alarm and you just smash it.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Connor, news item number two.
Behind 187 scrimmage yards from Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys took out the Eagles 27-20. The two teams are now even at 4-5 in the NFC, a game and a half behind the Washington football team in first place. I think that, you know, yes, this was a nice bounce-back game for Ezekiel Elliott. They established the run against a banged-up Eagles defense, but the Cowboys defense looks
good.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith might be two of the 10 best linebackers in the NFL right now.
What's crazy about that is, like, I almost feel like, look, no one's asking for Sean Lee to get hurt. He's been a great player there for a long time. But it almost feels to me like Sean Lee getting hurt allows them to, like, freeze them up. Okay, now we're going to put Leighton Vander Esch into the role that Sean Lee's played. And he looks like he fits that role like a glove. Like, he looks like he can really play that role. And their defensive line's been good for about a year or two now. Like, they've got good talent up there. Some guys with some knucklehead tendencies, but guys that can really play. And they've invested in their secondary. If I look at the Cowboys right now, I think they've got a legit chance to win that division, because there is a – like, I think that's the formula, is, like, Zeke has to be the engine. Like, Zeke has to be the engine because that accentuates your strength in the running game. If you get Zeke, or your strength in the offensive line, and if you can get him going, I think it makes things infinitely easier on Dak. And so I think there's a formula out there for the Cowboys. It's just a different formula than they've had to win with the last few years.
And how weird is it that almost, you know, all season we've been begging for some instance of creativity from Jason Garrett, right?
Yep.
But really, all along, it's been Chris Richard, it's been the defense. And,
yep,
you know, if you talk to people about how to slow down the offenses of right now, I mean, you look at that interception, I think, that Leighton Vander Esch had in that Eagles game. That's the playbook. They used, yep, a 300-pound defensive lineman to guard Golden Tate on that play. They forced him to look off his first read, and then Wentz comes back and throws the ball, and Vander Esch is sitting right there in the passing lane. Like, that's the playbook. That's, yep, how you do it. And so it's amazing, I think, that as desperate as we are to see the Cowboys be creative offensively, at least defensively, like at an odd point in time, they're finding their comfort zone.
And it feels like there is an acknowledgement. Like, there's an acknowledgement there with the way that they played this game that we're probably going to struggle if we're trying to win games on offense now. So we're going to play the game to our defense. Like, we're going to – like that's – like, when you run the ball as much as they did, when you make it such an emphasis, part of it is shortening the game, giving your defense a blow, making sure that the strength of your – if the strength of your team is your defense, like, you play the game a different way. And it does feel to me like they started to play the game a different way. Who do you guys think is winning that division?
I still think Philly wins, although that would really go against the history in the NFC East, where I think it hasn't been – the same team hasn't won 2 years in a row, I think, since, you know, the early 2000s with the Andy Reid's team, you know, the NFC Championship teams. So, you know, it's a weird division because there's always a new champion. But I still think Philly wins it. I don't know. I know they're banged up, but I still think they win it.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
You know,
I have no idea. I didn't know that was an option.
I thought
I think I would probably take the safest pick.
If I had to put money on it, I would probably say Philly.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to say Washington. The injuries in the offensive line would kill that. Like, because they, like, I feel like they've got, like, strength on both lines of scrimmage, and that's sort of how they've won to this point. Like, they've kind of played, like, this muddy game. But losing Brandon Scherff, losing Sean Laval, and now Trent Williams being out, like, I just... That's why I can't trust them. Not that, like, I think the way they've set the team is good, like, but I don't, based on the injuries, I'm not, like, I think that they're probably due for some sort of correction. And I just, I'm not sure I trust the Cowboys to keep playing the way that they've played on Sunday. Like, I think that that's there for them to keep playing that way. I just don't know if I trust them to keep playing that way.
Yeah, I think if you look at the room for a team to expand and to do something exceptional when they're fully healthy, I mean, the Eagles have the best roster. They have the best, yep, quarterback. You know, when everyone's healthy, they have the best offensive line. Maybe, you know, given Dallas's injuries, yep, that's up for debate. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think that's probably, that would be my pick as well.
Okay, Jenny, news item number three.
The good news is I am finally on the correct ledger of items. I was reading last week's, and I was wondering why we were still talking about the Saints outlasting the Rams in the Superdome. So the Jets lost 41-10 at home and now head into their bye at 3-7 and their coaching staff intact. Yeah, I mean, all indications are, you know, that they won't make a change during the season. And I would be surprised. I don't think that's what's Chris Johnson's approach here is going to be. I mean, it's not a situation where, like, it's not horrible. I don't think Todd Bowles has lost the locker room. In fact, you know, a lot of the players are defending him. So you just make it to the end of the season, and then you make the change then. I think that makes the most sense rather than – because they don't, right, really have a good option on staff.
That was their history too, wasn't it? Like Woody's history. I mean, even Woody, who's way more reactionary than Chris, like, they held on to guys. Like, I think Mangini was – like after the season, Rex, I think, was after the season, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's their history, period. To,
yeah,
like, even as reactionary as they've been to a lot of different things, like, I think that they've actually, like, rode it out with a lot with most of their coaches. So, and I'm with you, I just don't think there's another coach on staff that they can turn to, you know. And you were there,
mm-hmm,
this was as ugly a loss, like, to lose to that team, to lose to that Buffalo team, to a quarterback who was on the street 2 weeks ago. I don't know, man. Like, that's the sort of loss that, like, I think that's the sort of loss that, like, would cause ownership to take a harder look at a lot of different things, especially going into your bye.
And the way that it happened, like the first play was like a 50-yard deep shot by Matt Barkley, yeah. which like I don't think a lot of people knew that he had the arm strength to make that happen, because that was every bit of 50 yards. And then the next play, 29-yard touchdown run by LeSean McCoy. I mean, they were up after 50 seconds, you know. Yeah. They scored touchdowns with tackle eligibles. They fake punts. You know, it's sort of, you know, if you want to look as unprepared as a coaching staff can possibly look, you know, that's what the Jets were on Sunday.
And they looked flat, too. Like, that's the other part of it. I know
Rex Ryan ranted about that. Yeah, there was no fire and passion.
But even, like, while the game was going on, like, upstairs, I know that those guys took note of what was happening on CBS. Now, you guys see this? You guys see what Jay Feely said?
Mm-mm.
Jay Feely on the sideline. Like, this is a former Jet, is on the sideline. And he said, guys, down here, the contrast between the two sidelines is unbelievable. He's like, well, one team looks like they're really excited to be playing. The other team looks like it's a Saturday walk. Looks like they're here for a Saturday walkthrough. And just, I know those sort of things resonate with, those things can resonate with people who are in upper management. Like, they hear that, and it's like, what is going on?
I will say there are plenty of games this season when the Bills didn't look very interested in playing either. So I feel like it's a little bit. I mean, it's like you can cherry pick one example where they're like having a bad day, right?
I just think it's like one of those where it's like,
right.
God, you know, like if you're an owner and you're sitting there and you're looking to like you're hearing that, it's like the team's flatlining like that. Like, it's just, especially going into a bye, guys. Like again, I don't want to overplay that angle of it, but. Guys know, like, that whatever happens on that Sunday is they're going to have to live with that for 2 weeks, and that's a factor too. You know, like, okay, on the other end of this, we're going to have time off. We're going to have a chance to recharge. It's just going into a bye, having that kind of effort, I think, is a problem.
It looked bad. I mean, I still think the bigger thing that ultimately will be the decider is the fact that Darnold, you know, looked like he was regressing.
Yeah. I mean, I think with the Browns too, I mean, like, the atmosphere that Baker was in was a problem. Like, if there was any chance they were going to look at a midseason change here with Todd, I think it would have to be the environment's gotten so bad that we can't have a rookie quarterback in it.
Right. And that's where I think the difference is. Like, now I don't know what's going on in the offensive meeting rooms, but the Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley situation was just untenable anymore. And it doesn't seem like that's going on in the Jets building.
No question. Okay. News item number 4. Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield went 17 of 20 for 16 yards and 3 touchdowns as Cleveland raced to a big early lead at home and beat the Falcons 28-16 to get to 3-6-1. The Browns are another team that I think we start to look at and Not a playoff dark horse.
That would be a tasty pick.
You know what though? Yeah, and Greg Williams, like, they're forced to hire Greg Williams full time.
I would love that so much.
So they're 3-6-1, so it's like not like totally impossible, right? Like, if they ran the table, like, they'd probably be right there. But I think that, like, one thing that we see here is that John Dorsey has done a really nice job with rebuilding the roster, adding to the roster on the fly. I think there were already some pieces left behind that were pretty good that we probably, because of the mess between the coaching staff and the front office, overlooked, but you know, there are some good young pieces that were existing there. And there are another one, like the Colts. Like, I look at them sort of the same way, is, like, there's a rookie class that I think when you look at them going into year two, like the 2019 Browns, like, could be feeling dangerous. Like Baker Mayfield, who I just stole that phrase from, Nick Chubb, Denzel Ward, the linebacker,
Kirksey,
Gernard Avery is a rookie linebacker for them, and then Austin Barrett, we'll see where he is. He hasn't shown out yet, but it feels like there's like a lot to work with there, and that job, when we're talking about who's going to be getting it in January, like, that's actually like starting to look like a kind of attractive job.
I just cannot wait. They have 2 games against the Bengals left on this schedule.
Yeah.
How is everybody not, like, licking their chops? Browns players are already trolling Hugh Jackson.
Did you guys see Demaryius Randle?
Yeah. I think, like, I'm starting to really like this team, you know?
Yeah.
There's fun personalities, but sort of inbounds, just likable people, you know, competitive, likable.
And, like,
guys,
they're freed of, like, a lot of... Doesn't it feel like they're, they've been freed of something, like, this cloud that's been hanging over them for the last 3 years?
What did Randle say? I missed it.
So he retweeted the Bengals' announcement of hiring Hugh with, like, you know, like the crying, like the crying laughing emoji.
Oh, another
yeah.
emoji.
And it wasn't just one of them, it was three of them.
Oh, three. Well, like, that one generally comes in threes. I find that when I use that emoji, I use it in threes.
Right, because, well, if you text it in threes too, like, that's how you keep them big.
Oh,
right, so
yeah.
like when you text
right.
them, you,
right.
you make sure they come over big. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's the limit for the.
I would just love to see them put up a 50 spot on the Bengals. Like, I just think that would be so satisfying for everything that this team had to go through for the last 3 years, just to absolutely plaster this Bengals team. I mean,
I would love to be on the field to see the interaction. Like, wouldn't you? I would love to be just on the field.
No way they let him on the field before the game, right? No chance.
I can't. Like, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Like, I would love to be on the field for that to see. Because I would. Damn.
If you're Hugh, do you go jogging? Do you do like a do
the stadium
steps? Jog, like a brisk stadium jog before?
I mean, I will say, like, I think you have to, you know, just it's not a great situation. Like, his comments, obviously, I think he made a lot of things that he will regret down the line. But think about coming out of that gauntlet that you just came out of in like 2 years. And obviously, you're a part of it and you're the head coach of it, but you're just beaten down
yeah.
after 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I sort of empathize with both sides of it, right? I mean, they just endured this awful 2 year stretch. And obviously, he was the head coach and leading it at the time. And then he comes out and makes it seem like he's blaming everyone. And I get it. But God, he was, you know, that's a rough two year stretch as a coach.
That's a good point. It's hard, like, especially, like you said, like the way that it ended, it makes it easier to pile on. You
yeah.
know? And it's just like.
And there's been a lot of piling on.
Yeah. Guilty. Yeah.
All right. News item number 5.
Oh, is that me?
I think it's you.
All right.
Unprepared.
Unprepared as always. Both the Chiefs and Rams survive week 10 and come into this Monday's showdown in Mexico City, or tentatively Mexico City, with one loss. You tested me on that one. That's a big word.
Tentatively.
Tentatively.
Because the
surprisingly
field,
harder to say.
Because the field, apparently, is a disaster down there, which, who knew? Grass surface that's not built for football, that has priorities beyond football, is not holding up for football.
If you're the NFL, you cannot screw this up. This is the best game of the year.
And
by
look what you
far.
Did.
Like, this is the best game of the year, and you cannot screw this up. You cannot put them on a slow track. You cannot put Patrick Mahomes or Kareem Hunt or Tyreek Hill or Todd Gurley at the risk of getting hurt.
I mean, that's,
like, do
you know,
not
that's
screw
thing.
This up. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, like we saw with the Hall of Fame game a few years ago, and the field was terrible. And then the year before that, you know, the Steelers kicker hurt his ACL in that field. And it's just like, you know, when you go to these off-site areas that are not regular NFL stadiums, heck, even some of like the Dolphins field, they were blow-drying hours before kickoff. But that's, I mean, right, you have this premier matchup, two of the most exciting teams in the league, and player safety has to be it has to be foremost here.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, it is, this has got to be, this has got potential to be a very embarrassing situation for the NFL, and they got to make a call soon, too. And the idea of going back to, like, the PR problem is going to cause them in Mexico is gigantic, so that's one end of it, and we know how important all the business aspects are of this to them. Like, remember, they had the whole thing with the Texans a couple of years ago. It took forever for them to go back there, even though, like, the game's popular in Mexico versus certainly where it is in the UK. Like, it's popular there. And so they've had some PR issues in Mexico. So they're balancing that, like, which is, I mean, like, they've put an investment into trying to make it work there versus this is a marquee matchup. This is the game that everybody's been pointing to since September. And like you said, slow track and injury risk and all of that different stuff. And I think what you're going to find is what we always find, which is the business interests trump everything. And so if they can get the field in a position where they feel like it's even marginally playable, I think they're going
to
go.
Yeah, I do too, because it would take a lot to back out. Standings-wise, this is an extremely interesting game because the Chargers' only two losses are to the Chiefs and to the Rams. And the Chiefs lost to the Patriots, and then they play the Chargers again, right? So this is very interesting for the AFC West standings, which for a while didn't, you know,
it didn't look like it was competitive.
And then I just, you know, you look and the Chargers have the second best record in the AFC, and they play the Chiefs again, and the Chiefs have this huge game against the Rams. So it really has, you know, big ramifications.
The Chargers actually, like, their next two games, I think, are, I want to say it's Arizona and Oakland. So there's, like, a real good chance. It's not Arizona. It's Arizona and some.
They have one. They have the Steelers down the line.
Arizona and
Denver. I
think
that's their hardest
Arizona
game outside
Denver. Yeah.
of the Chiefs.
But,
yeah.
But if you look at it, like, there's a good shot that they're going to be playing that game against the Steelers first weekend in December at 9-2. And so, like, the Chiefs are not out of the woods when it comes to
it's interesting. Yeah. The two best teams in the AFC right now are in the same division.
The Rams probably
– record-wise.
The Rams are the Rams are out of the woods now in their division. Like, they're going to win that division now that they swept the Seahawks.
I think it's going to be the earliest a team has clinched their division since the 85 Bears.
Is that right?
This weekend? Yeah. It's the first time since 85 since that Super Bowl-winning Bears team that a team has clinched their division before Thanksgiving.
That's crazy.
Which is amazing.
Is
yeah. So who you guys think wins?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still like, you know, part of me is just like, just play this game in New Orleans or Dallas, or like let them play indoors. You know what I mean? Let them light it up.
Yeah.
And
but LA would be like that. Like, playing in LA, it's like, it's a fast track for a natural surface. The weather will probably be good. Like,
laser pointer issues down there too, you know. We gotta watch out for that. I mean, no,
and we really gotta watch to make sure everyone's jersey gets home.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
But I don't think Ortega's allowed it at NFL stadium. So I think
watch out, Jared Goff. They're coming for you.
I think they'll probably be in the clear.
Would the FBI investigate a Jared Goff stolen jersey too? Maybe.
I don't know. Like, where would the bar be?
I don't think so because I think he
slips under the bar.
I don't think it's really as much of a, you know, the value is not as great since it's not being worn in the Super Bowl.
True.
Right? So I think that, you know, I think a lot of players don't know where their game worn jerseys are from any particular game.
I think the only, like, so I think, like, it would almost have to be Brady Rogers level to merit, like, a federal investigation,
unless
right?
it was some kind of record, and then you know, David Baker would be wanting the jersey for
David.
The Hall of Fame.
David Baker would be working with the feds intimately.
Correct.
Be showing up with those white gloves.
He's the Hall of Fame guy that knocks on the door.
The guy who's checking.
He's got the white gloves to collect the Drew Brees, football, which was really a classic moment.
The white gloves are like, I don't know if you break out the white gloves to handle, like, a, you know, a football.
That's just, it was great. It was great.
Like, what was he like what's
no
the world?
Human would ever touch it again, I think, is what it was.
Well, what's the world like what's the worst case scenario if you're not wearing gloves?
Maybe the oils from, you know, it's not your ball to touch. I think I'm just going to back out of this conversation before we get ourselves in trouble here.
All right, so since you guys have been waiting for it, and those of you that are still with us, I know you've been waiting for it. It's time for Connor's fantasy update. What's happening, Connor?
So this was it, you know. I think there was a lot of momentum. We had a good time with the
– Connor's not pulling champagne out of a bag, by the way. He's
I know.
Not
I had all these
out.
Tricks, you know, and I rode in on the path today, a defeated person, facing Christian McCaffrey and Ben Roethlisberger. Just, you know, it's something that's not going to happen every week, but really proud of the way that everybody stuck through this season. You know, James Conner especially, that'll never be forgotten. His Herculean efforts on a poorly constructed losing team. And, you know, now it's, you know, despite my earlier Machiavellian attempts undercut Jenny. I am now fully behind Jenny as she makes her playoff push.
Well, this is like collusion?
I mean,
does Garofalo need to know about this?
We'll just have to check the transactions wire in the league, you know, if they want to see what we have cooking over here.
Well, but Mike can't report you, right? Because you have the texts.
I have the, I mean, I have all the documentation I need to bury him.
He can't report you.
No.
I admire your team's, you know, pluck, Connor. You were down 45-0 after Thursday night football. I mean, I checked, or was it more than that?
It was more than that.
I checked and I was like, wow, I wonder who had some of these, you know, Roethlisberger, McCaffrey. And then I saw they were both on one team. And then they were, I saw they were playing against you. So, but I'm not going to say anything more because last week I gloated about where I was in the standing and then I suffered an L. So just got, I was smelling myself too much.
So we've had Jenny talking about smelling herself and handling balls.
Not my best day. Not my best day. Try to do better next week.
All right. My fantasy team, actually, in case you guys care, and I know everybody does, like this vagabond band of miscreants. It's like, it's just like I said, that healthy tension we wanted in the locker room. We got it. We got to 8-2 this week. I was up by 40. I was up by 40 going into Monday Night Football, and I had Saquon going. So I was just running up the score last night on
watching that game with a glass of red wine.
Yeah, my buddy Tarigno, I was running the score up on him with Saquon Barkley. And I'm 8-2, second best regular in the league. The only team that's in front of me right now is Harbaugh is trash.
Do they have Patrick Mahomes?
You know what? Let me check.
Probably.
That reference, by the way, Harbaugh is trash is not. It's not John. It's Jim they're talking about. And you guys can imagine the makeup of my league.
Right. Ohio State heavy.
Yeah. And so the 9-1 squad's got Aaron Rodgers, Alvin Kamara, Brandon Cooks, Adrian Peterson, Juju Smith-Schuster, Greg Olsen, Mike Evans. So it's going to be
that's a surprisingly well drafted team. That's not one of these, you know,
just
jerks
into backed into getting Patrick Mahomes
or had the number
round,
one pick and
right.
took Todd
and
Gurley.
Talk
like,
early,
yeah,
like,
what a head scratcher that decision was.
Not a lot of imagination going on there. Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree.
So we've already started our advanced scouting of Harbaugh is trash. We're working on that right now. Appreciate you guys coming out.
Thanks.
We're into the six pack. You guys know how this works. Every week I put the question out, or the call for questions out on Twitter on Tuesday. You ask, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. I hit that little heart on Twitter and an answer here. Question number one is from Paul Vieira. I believe he works for the Wall Street Journal. Shout out to Paul for reaching out. At Paul Vieira, do the Vikings have a chance to win the NFC North? My answer to that question is absolutely they have a chance to win the NFC North. In fact, if I had to pick it today, I'd probably pick the Vikings. We're going to know more on Sunday, of course, when they play the Chicago Bears, who are red hot right now. I still like the Vikings' talent. I think Dalvin Cook is going to has a chance to change the dynamic of who they are offensively. And look, I know a lot of people are mad at me because I told them to take Dalvin Cook in their fantasy drafts over the summer. I still believe in the kid's talent. Like, I still think he can really play. So I think Dalvin Cook has a chance to really help them manage their offensive line issues. And that defense, like, that defense got right against the Detroit Lions last week, because guys were more focused on doing what they're being coached to do instead of trying to be Superman out there. So I think the Vikings have a very good chance to round into form and win the NFC North. Question number two, this is from Jason Berube. At Jason_Berube, who are your top three candidates you think could coach the Browns next year? Okay, I'm going to take the obvious one out of this. The obvious one would be Lincoln Riley. I don't think Lincoln Riley is going there. He's obvious because he coached Baker Mayfield in college. I'm going to take Lincoln Riley off the table. I'm going to give you my top three in no particular order. In fact, to prove to you that they're in no particular order, we'll do them in alphabetical order. Number one, Matt Campbell from Iowa State. People who know John Dorsey well, who've worked with John Dorsey, the circle that John Dorsey runs in, people there think highly of Matt Campbell from Iowa State. He's a Northeast Ohio native. I think he'd be a good fit for what they're looking for. I think the big question with him is, can he fill out a staff? But he'd be number one when we're going in alphabetical order. Number two in alphabetical order, John DeFilippo, the offensive coordinator of the Vikings. He has Northeast Ohio roots. That's going to be a theme here. Good quarterbacks guy, which you're looking for when you've got a young quarterback like Baker Mayfield. Has enough background in the NFL where he'll be able to fill out a staff. So I think that John DeFilippo would be a name to watch. So I'm going to put him on that list of top three candidates to look for the Browns job. And number three, Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator. Now, part of this is going to boil down to what Chris Ballard, the Colts GM, tells John Dorsey, the Browns GM, those two are close, about Josh McDaniels. But I think that Josh McDaniels has some of the qualities they're looking for, like DeFilippo, like Campbell. He's got Northeast Ohio ties. He's from Canton. And he, I can tell you this, he does like Baker Mayfield as a quarterback. And so there's a natural fit there. Whether or not he want to go home, whether or not he's ready to leave New England, I do think he'd leave New England for the right opportunity. Some of that's up in the air. There's some gray area here with Josh McDaniels. But if they're able to work through that, I think there could be a match there. Okay, question number three. This is from Harish Swaminathan. I'm sorry for butchering your name. At Harish 3689, favorite to win the NFC East. Again, it's like me and Jenny and Connor talked about. I like the potential of Dallas. I like what the Redskins have put out there on the field thus far. It's still hard to go against the Eagles. I think the Eagles have an advantage at quarterback in Carson Wentz. I think if they can get their tackles playing better and their corners playing better, they win the division. So to me, this boils down to, again, if you make a big investment, like they've made a big investment in a certain position and that position's underperforming, it's a problem. That's where they've been at the tackle position. So can you get Lane Johnson healthy? Can Big V be okay in his stead while he's out? And is Jason Peters going to round into form? They need to play well at the tackle spot, and they need to find answers at corner with Ronald Darby going down. If they can do those two things, I don't think they're going to repeat a Super Bowl chance, but if they can do those two things, I think they've got a better shot than anyone to win the NFC. So I would call them the favorite right now, although it's pretty close. Question number four from Virtual Signator. That's at Cleve Enthusiast. Another Cleveland question. Lots of Browns talk on this podcast this week. How sustainable is the Browns' newfound offensive success? Are there obvious things in Freddie Kitchens' play calling that defenses can target to frustrate them and turn them back into the week 1-8 Browns offense? I don't think it has anything to do with what defenses are throwing at them. I think it has to do with volume. And Freddie Kitchens has cut down the volume on Baker Mayfield, and he's not calling plays that Baker Mayfield isn't comfortable with. They want him playing fast. They want him fundamentally taking steps forward. He did that with his eyes this week. That's one thing that you can actually see. Go back and watch a screen pass touchdown to Nick Chubb. I believe it was in the third quarter of the game against the Falcons. If you watch him, Baker Mayfield takes the snap, looks left, looks left, looks left. While he's looking left, Nick Chubb sneaks through, kind of squirts out past the offensive lineman, and then Baker Mayfield turns his head, dumps the ball off to Nick Chubb, and the rest was academic. You know, he had a couple blockers in front, and the touchdown was about as easy as it comes for a player in that area of the field. There are little things fundamentally that I think they're working on with Baker Mayfield that they feel like can manifest themselves if they simplify things schematically for him. And so I think, you know, like again, like I don't think that staff's going to survive. I think there's going to be a whole new staff there next year. In fact, I'm pretty sure of it. But I do think that there are some things that Freddie Kitchens and that staff have been doing that are good that are going to help him continue to take steps forward in his development. Question number five from J-Rob. That's at JasonRob44. Every time a team signs a quarterback, we get a Kaepernick question. Since he opted out of his San Francisco contract, are there any whispers regarding whether he wants to play football again or not? Let's attack the first part of that. He opted out of his San Francisco quarterback to hit the market faster. They were going to cut him anyway. So this wasn't like a choice, like I'm choosing not to play. This was basically saying, I want to hit the market now rather than waiting till April to hit the market, so I'm going to opt out of my contract. There are whispers about his love for football. I have heard that stuff, his commitment to football, like where his priorities are. Look, we can argue till we're blue in the face about that. That is a question that's been asked out there. It was like, does he really want to play? If he comes back, does he want to play and engage himself in professional football? I think it's a fair question to ask whether or not there's truth to that. Only Colin Kaepernick knows. Question number six. This is from Travis Wingfield. The last question of the week. Is Adam Gase's job security dependent on the final six games, or is he already safe? This is similar to a question that I got from Chochos O'Reilly XPE. That's at Chochos_O'Reilly, who said, who's got the hottest seat right now? I don't think Adam Gase is in that category. The hottest seat right now to me would be Todd Bowles. It's an easy answer. I think what Adam Gase has to do, Adam Gase over the last half of the season has to keep the team engaged and has to at least provide hope that all the changes that he made in the offseason, adding speed to the group, fixing the culture, look, that all of that is going to manifest if they can put together another good free agent class, if they can put together another good draft class. I don't think all hope is lost. The biggest question to me with the Dolphins remains the quarterback position. It's what you're going to do at quarterback going forward. Do you continue with Ryan Tannehill? Are you looking at quarterbacks again going forward? But I think we saw enough good signs early in the season. And this doesn't mean there's not going to be organizational change somewhere. I think there's certainly a good chance there's going to be organizational change somewhere. But if they can just get to, you know, 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, and the changes that they made, the cultural changes that they made, the changes to the makeup of the roster that they made, if those keep showing up, I think Adam Gase is going to be just fine. Okay, we always appreciate you guys coming out, and we always appreciate your feedback, so we need that. You can get to me on my Twitter page, at Albert Breer, at my Instagram, at Albert underscore Breer, on my Facebook, at Albert R. Breer. You can get us, and as always, it really helps us if you get to us on iTunes and give us a rating and a review there. That helps with the algorithms and all of that different stuff. So if you guys leave us a review, you guys leave us a certain amount of stars, that's going to help us. If you mention us in particular in the comments, that's going to help us, because we're going to look at that and we're going to be able to make changes to the show, because this is your show according to what you want. But always remember, it's not just about us. Always remember to listen to all the MMQB NFL podcasts. That includes the two podcasts during the week that Andy and Gary Grambling do, the Gambling Podcast, and again, this podcast, the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, featuring Jenny Vrentes and Connor Orr. You can get us on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.